From Aspen Public Radio, this is Curated, stories on the artists who visit and live in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Claire Woodcock, arts and culture reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. It is Monday, September 25th. Writer Hunter S. Thompson's history is rich to the valley, particularly in Woody Creek, where he picked up residency at his home Owl Farm decades ago. It's where his bid for sheriff came to fruition, and also where he penned the novel Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. Today's episode takes place at Owl Farm. First, we'll go into the War Room, where Thompson wrote Fear and Loathing, along with many of his articles for publications like Rolling Stone, among others. Next, we'll head over to the property's guest cabin to learn more about the Freak Power Movement, which was this political party of hippies in Aspen revolving around Thompson's 1970 bid for Pitkin County Sheriff. We'll conclude today's show in the kitchen area of his home, where former Sheriff Bob Broaddus contextualizes Thompson's legacy on both a local and national scale. Thanks for tuning in, and hang on, because things are about to get freaky. After gonzo journalist Hunter S. Thompson died 12 years ago, his widow couldn't bring herself to touch anything. She's left his home office pretty much as is. Now, she's turning the entire place into a museum and artist retreat, including the War Room. It's in the basement area of his home in Woody Creek near Aspen, Colorado. He would spend up to 16 hours a day in this room, writing articles for Rolling Stone and cult classics like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Well, this room is full of history, and it's not something I take lightly.
It's been a journey for Thompson's widow Anita since her husband's suicide more than a decade ago. For a long time, she let very few people in here. The wall above his desk is covered with Polaroids, press passes, and letters. She picks up a ruler.
And it says, "Character is action," on both sides in Hunter's handwriting. He understood from an early age that acting on your thoughts and on all the things you want to do for the world and for yourself and to make the world a better place, you need to act, whether that be writing or protesting or resisting.
Hunter S. Thompson was known for gonzo journalism, writing without any pretense of objectivity with the reporter as part of the story, and in his case, a reputation for being difficult. Here's actor Johnny Depp playing Raoul Duke, one of Thompson's drug-addled personas in the 1998 film adaptation of Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
"We had 2 bags of grass, 75 pellets of mescaline, 5 sheets of high-powered blotter acid."
Hunter hired Anita about 2 decades ago to help with his archives. They fell in love and got married, and even after his death, she's still uncovering new things about him.
It's been a pleasure to unearth some things in the files and learn more about the love of my life through his history.
Anita Thompson kept everything the way the writer left it because it provided a sense of stability for her during a frightening time. Even the massive amount of ammunition Hunter had. He liked guns.
"I wouldn't let anybody dust. I just felt like maybe if I left everything as it is, somehow he would come back. Well, even if I knew that wasn't true, it did bring me comfort."
Anita left to finish her bachelor's degree in New York, coming home once a month to check up on things. While she was away, she realized the significance of Owl Farm as a literary landmark.
"My lawyer asked me, he said, 'So you're saving all the manuscripts and letters and photos and why are the beer cans? And what do you save every gum wrapper?' And I said, 'Well, why do I have to make any decisions about what to save and what to throw away? I just simply don't throw anything away. Would you throw Mark Twain's gum wrapper away?'"
Johnny Depp, by then a close friend, did buy 800 boxes of Thompson's archives. That cleared out space. After renovations, one side of the house will become a museum. The other part will be a place where writers and musicians can stay and work on long-term projects.
"And I hope those who visit Owl Farm, it helps them find their own voice."
She hopes to have Owl Farm ready for guests in about 2 years, but she may not make that deadline. Which is okay with Anita Thompson. She says she wants it done right. You're listening to Curated on Aspen Public Radio. Coming up, former Pitkin County Sheriff Bob Broaddus talks about the late writer's legacy, But before we go there, let's travel back to intentions we're building in the lead up to the full-on Battle of Aspen. These campaign ads from 1970 should give you a sense of the local political climate.
The American sheriff's job was carved out of the rugged West. It was a desperately needed position of few words, much action, and little praise or glory. Today, the sheriff has reams of responsibilities, but still, as in the past, the number one responsibility is to protect his people and enforce their laws. It takes a man who knows his people and their laws and wants to be sheriff of Pitkin County. Vote for and elect Carol Whitmire for our sheriff. Paid for by the Whitmire for Sheriff Committee, Dick Goodhart, chairman.
Hunter Thompson is a moralist posing as an immoralist. Nixon is an immoralist disguised as a moralist. This is James Salter. There'll be thieves and autorecs in Aspen, whoever gets elected. But Hunter represents something wholly alien to the other candidates for sheriff. Ideas. And a sympathy towards the young, generous, grass-oriented society, which is making the only serious effort to face the technological nightmare we have created. The thing against him is he's a visionary. He wants too pure a world.
The preceding a paid political announcement by the Thompson for Sheriff Committee, Michael Solheim, chairman.
Joe Edwards was a big player in the Freak Power movement. I spoke with him earlier this month in the guest cabin at Owl Farm. He starts off by explaining how the Freak Power movement began.
A number of the businesses felt threatened by the number of hippies that had come to town.
In 1967, he was a lawyer with his first case that ultimately became Colorado's first civil rights lawsuit, which he won.
And we sued the police and the mayor and the city council because they had taken this petition from the businessmen to strictly enforce the vagrancy laws to discourage these people.
Guido Meyer, the local police magistrate at the time, wanted Aspen free of hippies and was arresting them for vagrancy or undesired transients.
And so if you had long hair, you got arrested for hitchhiking. If you had short hair, you could hitchhike all day long. So they were definitely unbalanced and discriminating in the way they were enforcing the laws.
In 1969, Thompson became curious about Aspen's local politics. Up until that point, he had been working as a journalist, having moved to Woody Creek several years earlier. The most important office on the ballot was for mayor, but Thompson couldn't run because he didn't live in the city. Recalling Edwards' success with the hippie trials, Thompson convinced him to run.
Hunter called me at about 3 in the morning or something and woke me up. We talked for about a half an hour, and I said, I don't know, I had never thought of it. It never occurred to me.
The next day, they went over to the J Bar and yakked about it over a few beers, and eventually Edwards acquiesced. It was a close race. Ultimately, Edwards lost, but the results revealed there was a base for the Freak Power movement.
I think Hunter's interest was piqued by my election.
Under the Freak Power political party, Thompson ran for Pitkin County Sheriff in 1970 on a plan that's been described as one of the first compassionate systems of law enforcement in the country. This included efforts to stop rampant development by renaming Aspen Fat City, investigating consumer fraud, banning automobiles from downtown, and protecting the local environment around Aspen.
And at the start, I don't think he had any inkling to have a chance in hell of winning. I think his outrageous platform was just to move, to widen the scope of the conversation. We're not over here talking about liberal conservative. We're going to go over here and put bad drug dealers in stocks who are dealing cut drugs. And he was going to put developers who avoided our weak zoning laws, he was going to put all kinds of writs of assumption on them or some silliness like that. I mean, he just was having himself a high old time.
The race became the heads versus the hippies, the developers versus the freaks. And neither side wanted the other to destroy Aspen. The race made national headlines. Thompson's first story for Rolling Stone debuted in October 1970. It was called The Battle of Aspen, Freak Power in the Rockies.
You know, the way he related what occurred in the Battle of Aspen was, I thought, pretty accurate. All the things that he said happened in there happened. Whereas some of his later writings, he got free-handed with his exaggerations. And some of it in the later stories was completely in his own mind. It never happened.
So you'd say that that was probably his most accurate article?
As far as technically accurate writing, and he later got into pretty wild stuff.
Right.
I mean, let his imagination run free.
In the debates, it became apparent that incumbent Sheriff Whitmire didn't know how to handle the new wave of young people flocking to Aspen. When the national press arrived, expecting to find Thompson a spectacle, they didn't. He pulled moves like reading from the Colorado Revised Statute when he was asked questions like what he thought his duties as sheriff would be. Both the business and ranching communities were worried about Thompson's bid. That's when things started to get weird.
It got really weird. The Sheriff Whitmire hiring an undercover agent to try to infiltrate Hunter's campaign and offering them machine guns and drugs of all kinds and trying to get them entrapped into something.
Voter harassment charges were filed when a man was taken from the Pitkin County Jail by a sheriff's deputy to register in the clerk's office. The opposition filed challenges against newly registered voters with the county clerk, citing technicalities such as misspelled names or improper addresses. They also created a series of illegal campaign mailers they sent out to every post office box holder in Aspen just a few days before the election. Did you ever think Thompson would win?
I thought we might. I thought we probably would, actually. Because the first precincts that came in, he won the city. But then when we got out to the ranchers and more conservative down valley group, I remember the Jerome Hotel that night was body to body.
The night of the election.
He had his campaign headquarters. So the stairs were full, the whole downstairs was packed body to body, and everybody was really up and hopeful and, you know, yelling and happy, and he was ahead in the city. We were all pumped, and then big downer when the county Down Valley precincts came in.
Although the loss was devastating for supporters of the Freak Power movement, Joe Edwards says the campaign was a success because no one expected Thompson to win in the first place, let alone come in as close as he did.
You know, everybody was bummed out. But it changed things anyway. Brought such a spotlight to the ridiculous behavior that had been going on in the city police and the county sheriff's office.
In the 70s, much of the platform Thompson campaigned on was actually implemented. Carol Whitmire was removed from the sheriff's post in 1976, following incidents involving missing funds at the jail. Subsequently, Dick Keenest, Thompson's original choice for undersheriff, was elected and implemented a number of Thompson's original campaign promises, including a shift away from the enforcement of drug laws and a more humane approach to the treatment of prisoners. His team was nicknamed Dick Dove and the Deputies of Love. One of those deputies was Bob Broaddus. He was elected sheriff in 1986. Broaddus joins me in the kitchen of Owl Farm to talk about the aftermath of the Freak Power movement and Hunter S. Thompson's legacy.
I had moved here from the East Coast in 69, and I started reading about Hunter's political positions on several issues, and I agreed with all of them. I agreed with his, let's end the war on drugs, let's punish people who deal bad drugs, blah, blah, blah. So I signed up to volunteer as a foot soldier in his campaign. My job was to register ski bums who had never voted before. They were freaks. They were long hairs, called freaks by the establishment, and we decided to get as many freaks as we could to register to vote. That was my sole job. So I was talking my ski bum friends that registered as General Delivery, Aspen, Colorado. They were living in their vans at the Highlands parking lot, skiing every day, but they wanted to see some change here. So we started snowballing our freak power movement. We felt like we were going to win. And towards the end, we were, you know, we were celebrating, and then we lost. And most of us said, well, we worked, let's go skiing. But a whole bunch of us stayed in politics here. So freak power, even though Hunter as the prime example of the freak seeking power lost, freak power lived. And the guy that hired me as a deputy in 76, Dick Keenest, he would have been Hunter's chief deputy. If he had, if Hunter had been elected, Dick Keenest was going to be the undersheriff. He hired me in 76, and then after 10 years of working for Dick, I ran for sheriff. So there's this string of freak power from 1970 to the present. Joey DeSalvo is one of us. So one way or the other, we lost, but then we won.
He says he sees Thompson's platforms still being implemented today.
More than in public safety, I see it imprinted by land use policies. Hunter was a stone strong environmentalist. He thought that the worst threat to our valley here, other than certain public safety and law enforcement stuff, was land use. Everyone was looking for 100-acre, 1-acre zoning. So if you were a rancher with a 100-acre pasture, you wanted to sell 100 1-acre lots. Everyone was counting their money when the freaks, and I can name them like Michael Kinsley, Dwight Shellman, Joe Edwards, we downzoned the whole county. So that all of a sudden, if you had 100 acres and you wanted 1-acre lots, you were limited to 35 acres zoning. So you get three lots if you were lucky. And you went through a growth management plan. So what we didn't achieve in public safety for years until Dakitas got elected, we did achieve in land use and preservation of the ecology. We stood up to the plate and we swatted at fastballs thrown by developers and their lawyers with their three-piece suits and their alligator briefcases from New York City. We stood up and we swatted at their fastballs. We hit a bunch of foul balls, but we slowed them down. Our other choice was to crawl into the ground, pull the grass in over us, and come out 20 years later. But we stood up and we fought development. So, did we win or lose? That's a question that nobody can answer, but I would say we lost to the forces of the economy.
Broaddus reflects on Thompson's legacy as a writer.
Hunter's writing has affected people way beyond this community.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't think many people in today's community, you know, 2017 Aspen, know what Hunter said in his writings. I don't think they read. I don't think they care. And Hunter would be very demoralized by what has happened here in Aspen. It's become the mountain town of the 1%. Unless you are blind, you know that housing is beyond the reach of most working people. So we're importing our labor from 30, 40, 50 miles and longer away. They drive here every day. They drive home every day. They add 2 hours or more to their work day just because the jobs are here, but the housing is out of their reach. Yeah. I don't think that's well balanced. I think that a balanced community has sustainable housing, sustainable community, and Hunter would agree with me on all this. He would be way more articulate, and he was a master of the metaphor. He drew conclusions from comparisons. Like in the Rum Diary, he said, real estate developers spread like piss puddles on parking lots in Puerto Rico. That was alliterative as well as a metaphor. Yeah. So Hunter was a great writer, and his causes were public safety and public environmental concerns.
If he were alive today, Broaddus says that Thompson would still be disappointed by his campaign loss in 1970.
Hunter would probably agree with me that we fought hard and we lost, and it was preordained that you cannot fight the forces of the market. And the forces of the market recently have taken over. You've seen prices here for downtown commercial space and residential space go off the scale. Who the hell can afford to live here? Hardly anybody, if you want to buy in, you know? And it's the old thing about Aspen, sell it or save it, you know? Well, we sold it, and we're selling it every day. And guys are churning the mill. Every flip, every turnover is huge profits for the guys that invested. No one I know has lost a lot of money here. If they had to sell before the market reached another peak, it was because their financial horizon was not long enough. But nobody has lost money on Aspen real estate investment. So Aspen's become a commodity, and look at the real estate firms we have here now. They have headquarters in Germany, headquarters in New York, headquarters in LA. They're not local Mason and Morris mom and pop real estate agents. They are international marketers selling something that appeals to the people that can buy anything they want. Aspen has become a product and a commodity that most of us don't really accept. We like the old days where we controlled our local environment and all of our environmental threats. I think those threats have been fought against, but the threats have won. I would say that after the recession, because there was so much wealth created on Wall Street, that guys that invested, what do the banks pay? 2% interest at the most on a savings account? You can do a lot better on a West End lot or a downtown commercial property. So we've become a market force in the international globalization real estate trade. It's hard to admit, but people from Europe, people from Asia are investing in Aspen only because of its investment qualities. They don't have they write out a check to a nonprofit, roll up their sleeves and get all sorts of praise from the community, but none of them are out there volunteering, none of them are on Mountain Rescue, none of them are grinding around on the fire department. When I elected public safety as my career as opposed to land use and zoning, I said, hey, my job is to make sure people here are safe, not that they can protect their real estate investment or get the right to buy a house. So I had to separate from my community involvement and focus on one thing, which was public safety, which I think I did a great job on, and people here were real safe. We had 3 or 4 years during my administration where we had no violent felonies. No assaults other than domestic violence or misdemeanor stuff, which is very serious, but we didn't have the guys mugging you in the alleys downtown at 3 in the morning. It was a safe place to raise your kids, still is. What is quality of life? A big component of quality of life is security and safety. You know, that's the job I took on. As far as protecting the environment, we had many compadres who did a real good job at that. So our land use code has been as strong as you can imagine, and we're still sort of losing to the market forces.
That was former Pitkin County Sheriff Bob Broaddus speaking with me in the kitchen area of Owl Farm. Now let's spin Jefferson Airplane's track, White Rabbit. ¶¶
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small. And the ones that mother gives you chasing rabbits, and you know you're going to fall. Tell 'em a hookah smoking caterpillar has given you the call. Call Alice when she was just small.
Here's what's going on this week in the Valley. Wednesday, blues funk band Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears will play Belly Up Aspen with Lightnin' Malcolm at 8:30 p.m. Thursday in Carbondale, Studio for Arts and Works, also known as SAW, will have an open house starting at 5 o'clock p.m. Also Thursday, Is There Such Thing as Bad Art? The Aspen Art Museum seeks to find out with The Great Debate starting at 5 o'clock p.m. Aspen Public Radio's Carolyn Zachariasen is moderating. Thursday at the Carbondale Branch Public Library, CU Boulder Assistant Professor Rika Rose Roque will present on inclusive learning and new media as part of the CU Carbondale Lecture Series. That talk begins at 6 o'clock p.m. And Thunder River Theater Company's production of the play Dead Man's Cell Phone starts at 7:30 p.m. and will run Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. The Spectrum Dance Festival, as brought forth by Dance Initiative, kicks off Friday at 6 o'clock p.m. and will run through Sunday in the Launchpad. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the Glenwood Vaudeville Review's fall musical, Little Shop of Horrors, will run at 7:30 p.m. That's all that's curated this week. For more on arts and culture, tune into Morning Edition weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m. and visit us online at aspenpublicradio.org, where all episodes of this show live. I produced today's show solo. It was edited by Carolyn Zachariasen. Local musicians Greg Lau and Jason Patton wrote the show's theme tune, Omnicord Entrance. Special thanks to DJ Watkins and Grassroots TV for help with research on today's show, as well as, of course, the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation. I'm Claire Woodcock at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk. Thank you so much for listening. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.